I am happy to announce our 2024 Banking with Life client-only event. It's going to happen Friday, October 25th, beginning with a pre-event social mixer. The day of the event is Saturday the 26th, followed by an after party. It's going to happen downtown Fort Worth. I will be speaking there. Others will be speaking as well. You'll have the opportunity to meet me, and I'm looking forward to meeting you. You'll have the opportunity to meet the whole Banking with Life team and a room full of people that practice the infinite banking concept from all over the country. Last year, we had about 130 people from 30 different states. The year before that was really good, too. This year is going to be even better. We're going to have educational presentations and talks, and that should be important to you if you're practicing the infinite banking concept. I can't wait to see you. In this episode, I'm going to share a lengthy comment that we received on YouTube. Now, the gentleman is a perennial commenter. He's commented on several videos across several different platforms in varying lengths, but really the same types of comments that I'm going to share today. And so he really wanted to get his comments in front of me. So here we are, and I want to go through them with you. Now, you can pause and see the graphic in totality, his comments, and then refer back to it if you wish. But I'm going to go through them line by line, and I hope you enjoy listening. His first statement is, don't do infinite banking with a policy cash value. That's pretty much an opinion, you know, encouraging people that he doesn't know to do or not do things that he does not know about. If you are going to practice the infinite banking concept as taught by R. Nelson Nash, my dear friend and my dear late friend and mentor, then dividend paying whole life insurance is the item, the vehicle in which you would want to practice the infinite banking concept with. Not universal life, not your stock market account, on margin, CDs, what have you. You can bank with anything, right? Banking is a process. It is not a product. You can bank with real estate, right? If I own 10 homes and they're, you know, they have no mortgages or low mortgages, I can go out and do a cash out refi and buy more properties, right? If I have a stock account, I can go to the broker and borrow money on margin. If you have a qualified retirement plan, you can borrow within limits, 50% or $50,000, whichever's lower, you know, against your 401k, 403b, not your IRA. So you can bank with a multitude of things. But if you want to practice the infinite banking concept as taught by R. Nelson Nash, you would want to use a dividend-paying life insurance policy to control the banking function. So, my opinion, but it's also my encouragement for you to discover the infinite banking concept and not listen to people who don't know of what they speak. The next statement is, the problem with policy cash value is that although you pay dearly for it, it does not belong to you. You don't get to keep it. Well, of all the problems in the world of infinite banking, that's not one. But he's boiling that down to a price cost per death benefit. You pay dearly for it, quote unquote. Well, pray tell, what did you dearly pay for? Right. So you buy a life insurance policy, you're going to purchase a policy, you're going to pay a premium. There's no question that if you're just buying death benefit, the lower premium is going to be associated with a term policy. A higher premium is associated with permanent life insurance. And then if we use the word permanent, the industry does, you know, this industry comes with its own language. And so universal life, whole life, cash value life, it's really whole life, universal life, it falls under permanent, right? Both of them. When I use the word permanent, I'm talking about dividend paying whole life insurance, right, issued by a mutual company, because it has certain characteristics and certain contractual rights that you have in the future. And even currently, I mean, they exist. You have a lot of contractual rights as soon as the policy is issued. But there are things like non-forfeiture options in the future, if you don't pay a premium, the policy is going to lapse. Before it lapses, it goes through non-forfeiture options. As an example, the reduced paid up, I can reduce the death benefit in the future on a cash value whole life policy and have that reduced death benefit guaranteed. No more premiums due. And I'm just focusing on that one point, a universal life policy that you can accumulate cash or value in the account value, right, of a universal life policy. That issuing life insurance company will not ever guarantee a reduced paid up ability in the future. You think about that. All right. So this is, I can go on and on. I'm just saying dividend paying whole life insurance policy, it's considered permanent, but there's a difference in types of permanent policies. Okay, so he goes on, although you pay dearly for it. Well, yeah, you paid a higher cost per death benefit for whole life or permanent insurance than you do term. No question. But then there's a lot to learn about the premium structure of a policy that you're going to practice the infinite banking concept with, okay, if you choose to do that. Comma, it doesn't belong to you. Really, he's actually correct. If I buy a life insurance policy, I own the policy, and I enjoy, as the owner, all of the contractual rights that the owner is entitled to. The cash value is not your property. It is the property that remains in the life insurance contract. So it's not mine, but as the owner, I have a guaranteed contractual right to that cash value, either through a loan, I borrow against the policy's cash value, I'm borrowing the life insurance company's money, and I'm collateralizing that loan with the cash value, or I can get mad and quit, walk away with a surrender value. So, no, it's not mine, and it belongs to the life insurance company. I control it because I'm the contract owner. Then he continues, you don't get to keep it. I'm assuming what he's referring to is you don't keep the cash value when you die, which is a very common thought process, although it is flawed. You hear it from all of the internet gurus, the financial marketers, that the Meno Life Insurance Company keeps your cash value when you die. You don't get both. I think that's where that comes from. That's what he's alluding to. You don't get to keep the cash value. But let me say that, you don't get to keep it. So if you graduate, pass on through to the other side, let's say you have a $100,000 face amount policy and you have $50,000 in surrender value, you graduate, the death benefit is $100,000. That death benefit is comprised of the net present value of the cash value. It's really not complicated. Nobody's keeping the money. It's paid out as part of the death benefit from the life insurance company to your named beneficiary. Now, if you had an outstanding loan of $50,000 and a face amount of $100,000 and you graduated, the cash value that's collateralizing the loan is paid first. So the $50,000 loan is paid. The remainder of the face amount is paid to your beneficiaries. Beautiful characteristics of life insurance. And he continues, you don't get to keep it. The insurance company uses it to offset their cost when they pay the death benefit. It's just, the whole series of comments, there's several comments in this big, long rant that he left us. And perfect. I see it as an opportunity to share the, point by point, general misconceptions, just some outright, they're just not right. Some of the comments are just wrong. But Nelson used to say, and I say it because it's true, not only because Nelson said it. Nelson said it because it was true. Most people's understanding of life insurance is based on someone else's misconception. That applies to him, in my humble opinion, and anyone who forms an opinion off of comments like this. These are his misconceptions, and you sure don't want to base your understanding on misconceptions of anything, especially life insurance. Then he's encouraging, there's an alternative secret strategy that allows you to truly take control of every aspect of the banking process. Now, I'm sure he throws the word secret in there, you know, kind of pun intended for all the marketing and the noise that's going on within the Infinite Banking footprint. But then, of course, he's going to hopefully share with us what this secret strategy is to control every aspect of the banking process. I can't wait. He continues, you can control how the capital is invested, how much to take as a loan, even up to 100%, how to repay the loans, even never, and how much interest to pay on the loans, even 0%. The secret that your parents, much less whole life insurance salesman, that's another salesman, meant to be, I'm sure, a derogatory term for a licensed insurance agent. He's probably angry too. You know, he's probably in the basement just hacking out this stuff. I'm surprised he's not shouting. Okay. Much less a whole life insurance salesman never told you is that instead of paying dearly to the insurance company to create the capital you use, parentheses, a cash value in that case, you can fund your own savings or investment account and use that as your capital. Well, I was waiting to be really enlightened by something that was secret that my mom and daddy never told me. Didn't happen. Okay. So that's not a secret. Of course, you should be saving money. There's no question. So what he's alluding to, you just save money into the savings account. And I'll separate the savings account from the investment account because those are two different things. Savings is savings, zero market risk. Investing, quote unquote, an investment account. Investment implies, in my humble opinion and my understanding, the element of risk. The risk of loss. There's other risk associated with time and capital, I understand, but there's an absolute difference between savings and investing. Let me say for a minute there, you know, when you go to the bank and make a deposit, let's say you're building a savings account, you go and make a deposit into the bank, as soon as, maybe you're through the drive-through window, as soon as you put your money, your check, whatever, in that tube that gets sucked up to the teller inside, you know, when you release that, change of ownership occurred at that very point. You no longer own that money. The bank owns that money. It's not yours. You have a claim to it because you're the account holder, you're the depositor. That's not your money. Oh, my goodness. But you have certain rights to that as an account holder. You can get mad and withdraw it, no question. If you borrow against it, right, then you're going to use that for collateral at the bank or whomever you're borrowing money from. And then, yes, you can earn whatever interest rate is it's earning at the bank, but then you're going to pay an interest rate on the loan. But he says you can take as a loan. That's a loan, right? A loan is a loan is a loan. A loan requires collateral and a loan agreement at the bank and anywhere else. Okay? All right. So if you're going to borrow the bank's money, you're going to pay them interest, and they're going to tell you when to pay it back, how much to pay it back, you know, monthly, quarterly, whatever it is. annual line of credit, whatever the case is, they're going to control the loan repayment on that loan. And they're going to tell you what interest you're going to repay that loan at and when those payments are due. And then there's a whole series of events that occur, could occur, or will occur when you don't repay the loan. All right. So he used the word loan. Okay. And so if you're going to make a loan anywhere, you're going to have loan repayments. When it comes to the infinite banking concept and using this concept to control the banking function in your life, you're not practicing infinite banking. If you make loans without loan repayments, you're not doing it. Right? That's not, you're not being an honest banker. You're violating one of the first four fundamentals that R. Nelson Nash simply laid out. Number one is to think long range. Number two is don't be afraid to capitalize, i.e. pay a premium. And number three is be an honest banker. Don't steal the peas. Right? Okay. So the secret that the parents plus the salesman didn't tell you, you know, is you can fund your own savings. Of course you can. But then he talks about loans, right? So let's say you put money in the bank and you're accumulating money in a savings account. As soon as you withdraw that money, you are never going to earn another dollar of interest on that money. That's withdrawn. Now, you may go put it in another bank or another place that has interest. Let's say I make a withdrawal to make a purchase. I get to enjoy whatever purchase I made. I'm never going to earn interest on that money again unless I'm purchasing an interest-bearing entity or an appreciating entity. The bank's not going to pay me a nickel of interest as soon as I withdraw the money. Let's don't forget that, okay? Of course, he leaves that. He doesn't think through. I would assume, it'd be a safe guess or a safe assumption of me, I believe, that the gentleman's never read about the infinite banking concept. He's never read Nelson's book, Becoming Your Own Banker. But do I know that? Of course I don't know that. If he did, he didn't get it, you know, and frankly, I don't want to disparage the guy, but he probably doesn't have any money anyway, right? He doesn't understand leverage or cash flows would be also a safe guess, but I could be wrong. Okay, I digress. So here is how and why I practice infinite banking with my own savings account at a high-yield online bank. My bank is Ally Bank, in parentheses. Don't need a salesman to sell me my account. Remember back in 2008, 2009, somewhere around there, General Motors gets in trouble with all the other automobile companies, and they're so profitable selling cars at 0% interest, and they get into financial trouble. They had to sell the most profitable arm of their business, GMAC. Now think that one through. Yep, they sold it. It got reconstituted into Ally Bank. Yeah, they've been in trouble once. Okay. I'm just making a historical point. I could be wrong on the dates. And he doesn't need a salesman to sell him an account. Well, he's got to go talk to somebody at the bank, and maybe it's an online bank. He's got some paperwork to do. He might avoid speaking with somebody. Perfect. He didn't have to be convinced to save money in a savings account at a bank that's already been reconstituted. Like it's a bad thing that you have to talk to a salesman. And it may be a bad thing for him. Okay, he continues. My bank, where I quote unquote store my cash, does not charge any commissions. Period. I quote unquote broke even on day one, not year seven. So maybe he's watched a bunch of videos online where a policy total premium compared to total cash value equalizes in year seven. I don't know where he's getting year seven. That's another safe assumption for me. So when he says broke even in year seven, of course, that doesn't take into account the death benefit or the cost of the death benefit, which he's very anti, right? The cost of the death benefit. I mean, even paying the cheap term premium to do an equal comparison just on that one point. If you put money somewhere over 7 years, there's a rate of return. If you're going to compare it to life insurance, yep, you're going to compare the internal rate of return. But you also have to compare the cost over that 7 years or whatever time period you're comparing of the death benefit. So let's don't leave that out. Okay. And where he stores this guy doesn't store cash anywhere. He can't wait to withdraw it and not pay any interest or charges. Okay, he goes on, or he continues in that statement, does not charge any commissions. His bank doesn't charge commissions. Oh my goodness, they must be a nonprofit institute, right? They don't make any money, or do we use different terminology? Fees, commissions. Right, surely the fees would be lower than commissions with your modest deposit. But it's not like anyone's putting money in the bank for free. Right, there are costs, but this also implies that commissions are bad. Right, and I personally don't believe they are. I am a licensed insurance agent. I get paid commissions. I'm also an investment advisor. I get paid fees. You know, and I know, everything you do in life that has a cost for a product or service, you, me, the consumer, pays for all of it. Whether you call it a fee, a revenue share, a commission, W-9 income, W-2, I mean, well, not W-9 income, but potentially that could be a cost. If I back that up, like, commissions have a bad connotation because it's commission. It's revenue, remuneration. Nobody here is working for free, right? And nor should they. I just don't think that, personally, that commissions are bad. Your bank is every lending institution. Of course, he's not talking about borrowing money. Well, he did earlier. If he borrows money, there's an interest charge. There are costs associated with storing your money, your wealth, in a bank. Okay. Then he continues, my bank has no fees to SAP effective interest rate. Currently, 4.25%. Well, I'm glad that he's earning 4.25%. Interest rates have gone up a little above that, and now they've come back down to about that. But let's look at the 15-year low interest rate environment that we're talking about. Let's use his time period of the last 7 years. His bank's not been paying 4.25% for the last 7 years. Neither has yours. Now, I'm not saying you can't go buy a CD. We're talking about a savings account here. So this is another point that people, whether they're for one company or another company within the Infinite Banking footprint, or you're in the market, or you're in Universal Life, or you're in real estate, or you're doing all of these different things, right? The it's quite common that the time period for comparison is cherry-picked. He used 7 years as a time period earlier, but now there's no time period used in the next point. And my point is that his bank hadn't been paying 4.25% over the last 7 years. So, you know, not, of course, it's never an apples to apples or fair comparison. If you have a preconceived result that you want, he has a preconceived result that he wants. He wants to assure everybody that'll take time to read his rant that the infinite banking concept, controlling the banking function in your life, is not good for you. Like, he presumes to know what's good for you. And then he speaks about life insurance, of which he knows little about, or what he does know about is not enough to make the comments that he's making. in my humble opinion. But don't misunderstand me. I'm glad that he sent this long series of questions. Right, I sincerely see this as an opportunity to talk through them. And let me say this too, while I'm talking through these, I'm not being comprehensive. These came in a while back, this comment did, it came in a while back and brushed it out and looked at it before I sit down. I'm not making excuses, I'm just saying that the total commentary that I make on his comments is not necessarily comprehensive. I assure you, I'm leaving some very good points out, okay? Okay, at my bank, if I want some of my money, I just request it, and then they give it to me, no fees. Well, we've already established that the money he's putting in the bank doesn't belong to him as soon as he made the deposit, so it's not his money, but he does have the right as the account holder to go and withdraw some money, no question. And I doubt, of course, there are no withdrawal fees, right, from a bank. Maybe he doesn't write checks. Maybe he's a cash-only guy. Maybe he doesn't use Venmo and all of these other tools that take charges whenever you move money. PayPal, I don't even know them all. PayPal, Venmo, whatever. Your credit card. There are fees associated with the movement of money. Except in this one case where he withdraws the money from his bank. Oh, wait. Now, you mean there are fees associated? Yeah. Well, let me say this. You can, as you pay a premium to a life insurance company, when you're practicing the infinite banking concept, the premium has specific places, or you're buying specific things whenever you pay a life insurance premium. Number one, it comes with a death benefit, and you know, all the other riders that you're purchasing, whatever they may be, term, spousal term, guaranteed option to purchase more death benefit in the future without underwriting. There could be, what do they call, accelerated death benefits or nursing home benefits. Most of them will have a premium for that benefit. Some don't have a premium for that benefit. The cost in that case would be at the time of use, okay? But part of that premium that's being paid, in addition to the term and all the riders, which term is a rider, a portion of that is going to be paid into the paid-up additions rider. There's a fee. The fees vary across the board to when you pay a premium into the paid-up additions rider. There's a fee associated with that, no question. And then there's a base premium, which is you're buying a whole life policy, which is called the base whole life policy. And then you're putting these riders on there, okay? Now, so there is a fee whenever you pay a PUA premium. And as you pay more PUA premium, the cash value is greater and greater, which, because the majority of that PUA premium goes to cash, less the fee. So if the fee is, if I put in $10,000 as an example, I pay $10,000 into a policy, I'm paying $10,000 paid up additions rider premium. Maybe there's a 5% charge. That 5% is a charge, it's deducted because I'm buying something with that, right? Then that $9,500 roughly becomes cash. Well, in my example, it would. $9,500 would be cash. Okay, that additional $9,500 in cash value causes the future dividends beginning this year, the year that I paid the $10,000 in premium in my example, and every future year, you caused the dividends to go up. Was there a cost? Yes. Were there benefits? Yes, yes, and yes. Okay, so I'm not jumping over the cost. But let's say that next year, I want to withdraw money from the PUA. And I'm not saying that the charge on the PUA, let's say it's 5%, and maybe you have a 5% dividend. I'm not saying that that's a wash. I'm not saying that at all, and which is another, spend the whole episode on that, dividend interest rates, loan interest rates, and charges to on policies. But the bottom line is this: there's going to be that cash value of $9,500 net of the fee from the PUA premium payment is going to be larger next year because there's a guarantee increase in cash value each year. So that value is going to go up. And then that premium caused the dividend to be higher compared to me not paying the additional $10,000 in PUA. So that $9,500 is going to be greater. There's going to be a higher value at the next anniversary date. Okay, so if we go right up to that anniversary date, I zoom right past it a week later, I can go withdraw money from a paid up additions cash value. So I'm just saying in the future, there are situations where there is no fee to withdraw. There was a fee paid in the beginning. That fee purchased something and did something positive for you. Okay, if they send me money, his bank, if his bank sends him money from his account, there's no need to pay it back into his account. But I can if I want to at 0%. There's no question he's comparing, in my opinion, deposits, withdrawals, right, to premium payments, loans, and loan repayments. It's, you know, they're different cash flows. If I'm going to make a deposit, it's going to be at a bank. If I'm going to make an investment, it's going to be at an investment company of some kind. If I make a premium payment, it's going to be to a life insurance company. All right, they could all be equal cash flows. It could be 500 deposit, 500 investment, you know, and then 500 into a life insurance policy. So it may be the same cash flow amount, but they're doing different things. And so when you think through, or when you understand the infinite banking concept, I mean, it's very easy to demonstrate. If I have money in a savings account and I withdraw that money to make a purchase, I'm never going to earn any interest on that money that's withdrawn. I get to enjoy the purchase. The lost opportunity. You have lost the opportunity to earn interest on that money forever. It does have a cost. And if you can't see that or refuse to think through it, perfect, no problem. Just because you don't recognize it, verbalize it, or agree with it does not mean that that, in fact, is not true. So I'll just leave it at that. At my bank, if I want to close my account, they give me 100% of my funds. No surrender fee, in parentheses. Now, we've already reestablished, and I'm just going to reaffirm, the money in the bank account is not his. That is the property of the bank. He is the account holder. If he is, then he has rights. He can withdraw it, and there is no surrender fee. Perfect. There are no surrender fees on all life insurance. A surrender fee comes from an annuity contract, an investment agreement, and it's not even really then a surrender fee. It's another fee, just changing the names of fees and cash flows, right? So if you withdraw money from a dividend-paying whole life insurance, there is no surrender fee. That is specific to universal life policies and annuities, a surrender fee. Now, if I paid $100,000 in premium over some time period to a life insurance company for a dividend-paying whole life insurance policy, and the cash value is $90,000 or the surrender value is $90,000, I get mad and leave. I walk away with my $90,000. That is not a surrender charge at all. That's a difference in what you paid in premium and what the surrender value is. Now, you can call it what you will. It's a loss, no question, but nowhere on the documentation anywhere is going to be surrender fee unless it's a universal life policy. So, excuse me, words do have power. They do have meaning. You know, in words, you know, thrown about like this without clarity, you know, have meaning, right? They have power. If I read this, oh my gosh, a surrender fee. Now, am I to assume a surrender fee exists on all life insurance? Huh. You know, so let's just be clear on what we're talking about. It's okay. He continues that my bank earned taxable interest. That is because my account experiences real growth of money I can readily spend. Like, okay, perfect. The cash value accumulation in a life insurance policy is legally, technically, and actually tax deferred. Doesn't mean it's not real. See the implication there? Oh, that's not real. Oh, it is real. It's a real number on a page. It's like your account values at the bank are real numbers on a page until you go and actually get those worthless Federal Reserve notes, right? They're numbers on a page. They're real when you access the values. And they're even more real, if I can say, when you buy something, real property. So if the cash value is accumulating tax deferred, and it is, and you make withdrawals, it's only taxable if the withdrawal amount has exceeded the cash values, right? So let's say I paid in $100,000 in premium over time. I start making withdrawals, right? The withdrawals are tax-free to me, not taxable, until I reach my basis. My basis is what I paid into the policy. Let's say I paid in $90,000 in premium for the policy, and I have $100,000 in accumulated tax-deferred surrender value, and I start making withdrawals, right? In this situation, it's LIFO, last in, first out. FIFO, first in, first out. I can withdraw up to my basis, $90,000. No tax. Why? I'm just recovering my basis. And then when I withdraw above my basis, it's taxable at ordinary income tax. So it is real. At my bank, I will always have taxable interest income because I am able to pull out more than I put in parentheses. The same could apply to cash value, quote unquote, infinite banks, but you're unlikely to ever pull out more than you put in. It's almost too easy. It's almost too easy. He will always have taxable interest income from his bank. Oh, okay. Let's go back outside of your cherry-picked timeline. Go back 4 or 5 years when you were earning 0.1%. Yeah, great. And you get to pay taxes on it because it's a gain. Well, man, perfect. But he's implying he's always able to pull out more than he put in. And the same could apply to cash value infinite banks, but you're unlikely to ever pull out more than you put in. What's that based on? Getting mad and quitting in the first year? There's no basis for that statement, period. Even in his own scenario of earlier where he is made whole or whatever terminology he used in the 7 years, right? 7 years, I'm saying cumulative premium equals cumulative cash value. Okay, well, if things continue, there'll be a year 8. So even in his own scenario, there's a time in which he would pull out more than he put in. It's just not accurate. And let me, too, go back to Nelson Nash. Number one, think long range, right? If you can't think beyond a week, a month, a year, 5 years, 10 years, the infinite banking concept may not be for you. Perfect. Think long range. What does that mean? Now, I don't know your particular situation, but maybe you have children or grandchildren. Maybe your child is 10 years old. Maybe you're 35. Maybe you're 40. Let's just say you're 40 years old with a 10-year-old child. Why can't you or why shouldn't you consider thinking in a 50-year timeline? You'll be 90 if you make it. but your child is going to be 60, right? Just because you are not going to live as long as everyone else and some of your people doesn't mean you can't think long range. If we're talking about changing the direction of your life by controlling the banking function, and you can, and we are, you could change the direction of your future children. That's absolutely positive, possible, and it is positive. Okay. At my bank, loans are tax-free. Well, then he, you know, justifies his own statement in parentheses, all loans everywhere are tax-free. Well, I don't know about everywhere, but I know about in the United States, all loans are tax-free. Why? Well, they're not income. They're not income. It's not income. So it's not taxable. Of course, you go have an automobile accident. You have insurance. Your insurance pays a claim. You get a big check. I hope everything's okay. That check is not taxable. Right. Of course, it's a replacement of a loss. Oh, just like a death benefit. That's why a death benefit is not tax-free as well from a life insurance policy. But loans are not, you know, counted as income. If you're a business owner and you go borrow $100,000 for operating capital or whatever, they're not going to send you a 1099 for income on that loan, no question. So he's almost implying that there's something magically being promoted about tax-free loans. I don't know. All loans are tax-free in the United States, to my knowledge, no question. At my bank, if I take out a loan, the maximum amount is not tied to some percentage of my savings account. Well, that's debatable. It depends on what you're collateralizing at the bank. You go collateralize your savings account, and I'll guarantee you there's a limit. It's a balance of your savings account. Oh, okay. So maybe you don't want to collateralize your savings account to avoid this magical limit. What are you actually collateralizing at the bank? Real property that's undervalued. Do you think if I have a car worth $100,000, the bank is going to lend me $100,000? No, heck no, and you know it. Right. If I have cows that are worth $10,000, you think the bank is going to loan me $10,000 solely on those cows? No, and you know it. Oh, but when I sign my John Henry, not only am I committing, collateralizing whatever I'm collateralizing, the cows or the car, but I'm collateralizing my future production, everything that I own, plus what I create in the future. That's what's collateralizing the bank's loan, sir. So if I go to the life insurance company and collateralize the cash value of a policy that I own because I have the contractual right to do so, is there a limit? You dang right there's a limit. The banks make bad loans all day long. That's why they require over-collateralization and God knows what kind of interest. The life insurance companies don't make bad policy loans. Huh, why is that? Because you can never borrow 100% of your cash value. There's always an internal net reserve. It's just the mechanics of the life insurance policy. I have $100,000, maybe I can only borrow $90,000, right? They're in there hedging their bet. They're setting aside interest to the next payment. They're going to act like you're not going to make a loan repayment, you're not going to make an interest payment, and you're not going to make the next premium payment. Oh, conservative. Right, but now if I got mad and quit, I could withdraw the whole surrender value. I can never borrow 100% of the surrender value. The companies are internally reserving as if you're not going to repay a loan or premium. At my bank, if I get a loan, my savings account continues to earn interest unaffected by a loan. Parentheses, wow, all cap, wow, just like cash value, infinite bank. I mean, it seems to me that he's trying to impugn anything about this idea of controlling the banking function. Maybe he's making fun of marketers online, which my heart, you know, we're kindred spirits in that. I make fun of the noise and marketers all day long. I'm not really sure. Maybe he's doing both. So at my bank, if I get a loan, my savings account continues to earn unaffected, earn interest unaffected by the loan. Well, that's true with most life insurance policies as well, especially with a non-direct recognition company. If I borrow from the life insurance company, I'm collateralizing the cash value of the policy. I'm going to pay an interest rate on that loan just as he would at his bank. Now, on a direct recognition company, I might receive a reduced dividend, right, on the amount that's outstanding in a loan. Is that the end of the world? No, because all of those values of a life insurance policy are going one way, Einbahnstrasse, up 24/7. Okay, so your policy, a policy still continues to accumulate on a guaranteed basis, and then a non-guaranteed basis from the dividend. Dividends are not guaranteed. So on a direct recognition company, they can directly recognize the outstanding loan and reduce the dividend. The cash value, the total cash value, is still growing one way. So it's a shallow argument, a moot point. You know, it's like there's no teeth in that. There's no teeth in most of this, but that's you. Okay, at my bank, if I die, the bank does not keep the funds in my account. My designated primary or secondary beneficiaries get all of it. In parentheses, ask your salesman what happens to your cash value. I've already explained it. I've explained it many times over the 500 free videos that are available at no cost to you, the listener, the viewer, anyone who wishes to listen, watch. 500 hours, all right? Well, I don't want to say 500 hours, but 500 videos. The cash value, immediately, if I died today, my lovely wife gets everything that we've accumulated, not given away. And the cash value, let's say I have $100,000 in cash value on a $300,000 face amount policy. That $100,000 in cash value immediately turns into $300,000 when I die. The life insurance company, the Mino company, didn't keep my money. They paid it out in a death benefit. This is simple, not above third grade math, right? And let me tell you what doesn't come with your deposit at the bank is that death benefit. You have $100,000 in the bank. I have $100,000 cash value. They're both earning something going up, right? If I die today, that cash value immediately multiplies into the death benefit. And the longer I live, the greater that number is. So, I'm okay with that personally. I mean, it's I have no problem. My wife receiving much more than what I paid in or what we paid in. Okay, and then, you know, if there is interest earned on his account when he dies, your estate is going to pay taxes on any interest that your estate earned. Oh, wait, and then you're potentially going to have to go through probate, not as an attorney, know some of the best ones in the country, not giving legal advice. But, oh, wait, everything that you own is going to be probated or passed by contract law. So I hope you have a will in place where your heirs can just waltz right into the bank and make your withdrawal right after your estate pays taxes on the interest that you earned. I graduated with a life insurance policy, $100,000 cash value, $300,000 in death benefit. My wife gets a check. No probate, no judge, no attorney. God bless them. They all have their place. Yeah. I guarantee you she'll be okay with that because there'll be a big hole in her life when I graduate, right? I'm just saying. okay. So ask your salesman, what happens to your cash value? This gentleman, Mark F., let me be clear, Mark. I know you're trolling around on all the sites. The cash value immediately grows to the death benefit when someone dies, with life insurance. That's what happens. Therefore, it's paid out in multiples to the beneficiaries, primary, secondary, tertiary, income tax free, probate free. Not so with your savings account. I'm just glad with your commentary here, it implies that you may be saving money. So I'm very proud of you for doing that. Okay. My bank does not provide a death benefit. No kidding. Then in parentheses, OMG, at my stage in life, I don't want or need one. And they don't make me pay for it either. In parentheses. And if I want life insurance, I would buy a term policy. Perfect. Thank you for sharing your opinion and your position on life insurance. At your stage in life, who knows what that means? Maybe you don't have any loved ones. Maybe you've never given any money altruistically over your lifetime, and you'd want to continue that giving if you graduate. Maybe that's never occurred. Maybe you've never given any. Maybe there's nothing that you care about that you want to continue to fund beyond your life. Okay. Maybe you have no loved ones that you want to leave anything to. Okay. But if you did, you're going to buy term. And with term, you'll have that coverage. And it'll pay if you die while that coverage is in force. Yeah. And we've all heard the statistics. I've heard anywhere from 97 to 99% of all term does not pay a death benefit. Yeah. Think about that. Wonder why, James, the longer you live, the higher the price, the premium is. You know, you buy these 30-year terms, buy term, and that's the difference. You wake up at 35 or 40 or 50 or 55. The price has gone through the roof. You can't keep it, but you try to. So you go through underwriting, and you can't pass underwriting. Yeah. Term has its place. Term for a specified period of time. No question. You just live one day past your 10-year term. There will be no death benefit paid. I appreciate you telling us what you would do if you did it. Okay. So that wraps up my commentary on Mark's comments. I thought that and I appreciate the comments. I just want to say, you know, I don't agree with his comments, but I appreciate that he made them. He obviously wanted me to see them because he posted comments across several, you know, channels, media platforms. He posted a lot, so he wanted me to see them. I've seen them. I've shared them and discussed them with you. I think that they're important because his questions and comments are framed from the position that he does not know what he's talking about. He has not read, with at least an open mind, without prior contempt, Nelson's book, Becoming Your Own Banker. Now, he may have listened to a bunch of marketers out there about the infinite banking. You know, no question that could be very true. But his understanding of life insurance is clearly based on someone else's misconception. So I thought this was very powerful. That's why I wanted to do it all in one take. And so I hope it helps. Mark, I hope it helps you, sir. And I would just encourage you to continue your thinking, right? Just expand your thinking. And I've had fun, and I hope you enjoy it. So thank you.
Thank you for joining us on the Banking with Life podcast. If you're watching on YouTube, make sure to like and subscribe and click on that little notification bell. Otherwise, join us on Apple Podcasts and Stitcher for weekly content.